Live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Total Celebrity Show. You can check me out on Twitter at Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley Facebook, LinkedIn Neil Haley, Instagram Total Tutor, Pinterest Neil Haley, Google Plus, and also on Periscope at Total Tutor. In the history of NBC's The Biggest Loser, I've interviewed many contestants, I've interviewed many trainers. But winners, I've not had the opportunity. And the latest winner, so I'm excited to welcome the program from NBC's Biggest Loser, winner of season 17, Roberto Hernandez. Roberto, thanks for calling and congratulations.
Yes, thank you. I'm very excited. How are you guys doing out there?
Oh, we're doing fantastic. Roberto, it's just something that journey, starting from day one to Monday night when you won, what a journey it's been, hasn't it?
It was God sent. You know, it was amazing. It was a great feeling to get my hand raised on Monday. But everyone should have had their hand raised because everyone did a great job.
Well, they definitely did a great job. And in the process, and you become friends with so many of those people because you all struggled through the same thing, losing weight and getting healthy.
Yeah, we went through it together, and we became more than friends. When I was on Jen's team the first half of the season, the black team, we became family, and we became really tight-knit family. That's why they ran to me when I won.
And that's the great thing, because, again, regardless of your first, second, third, the win you get is losing that weight and getting healthy for your family.
Lewis and I went on to the challenge knowing that the money would be great, but we wanted our lives back. We wanted to be able to lose the weight and do it for our family and kids, and we did. And I'm so happy, and I thank God. I thank the Virgin Mary. It was an extraordinary ride, and I'm glad I was able to share it. I was able to share it with America.
So your face had a lot to do with keep on going, right? There was times, Roberto, you wanted to quit, I'm sure, like everyone at times with the struggle.
Yeah, you know, we would pray before every challenge, before every weigh-in, before every anything, any workout, whatever. We would get together and make sure we say a prayer because our praise goes to the Lord, and we knew that we wouldn't be able to do it without Him on our side. So we definitely prayed to Him and the Virgin Mary. Thanks to them, we were able to make it this deep into the season.
Now, it wasn't just a great night for you, Roberto. It was a great night for everyone to get kind of reveal the weight they lost. But what about your brother? That was exciting too.
Yeah, that was amazing. I was backstage because I was in the next segment. Backstage listening in, and I'm telling people to get out of my way because they have a little TV in the back, and I'm trying to listen to what they're saying. And next thing you hear is, Lewis, you are the at-home prize winner. And I start jumping around, and I'm running around, hugging everybody, giving all the pretty girls kisses and stuff. It was amazing.
So you're like, okay, can this be can we win both of them? You're probably like, okay, I guess Lewis is going to be the champion. I was the one in the finals, but he's going to win it. And then when your name's announced, you're like, holy cow. What a great day for this family, wasn't it? For sure.
It was great for the Hernandez family, huh? We had a great, great outcome. We were really excited. You know what? Tell you the truth, the first thing that came to thought was my kids, you know, and my wife, and how happy that they are. They're going to be when they see me, and my parents, you know, it's been an amazing supportive system at home, and I can't wait to get it back because, to tell you the truth, I'm terrified. I am so scared of going home and gaining this weight back, and I'm promising to myself and I'm promising you guys and the Lord and the family that I am not going to gain this weight back, I need my support system. So I can't wait to go home to start this new life with my kids and my wife. And first thing I'm going to do is I'm dedicating a couple of days to Jacob because he needs his daddy. You know, he made a comment the other day saying his fat daddy. And we went to Universal Studios on Sunday, and I showed him what his new daddy can do. And we were running around playing hide-and-go-seek. And at the end, walking out, he grabbed my hand and he looked at me and he said, "Daddy, I love this daddy a lot more." So I can't wait to start that up.
Well, I'm excited for you there. And that's a great point you made. You win it, you got to keep the weight off and maintain.
Yeah.
So the big thing you now need to do is a support group. What I think that NBC is the biggest loser does, because it's not it's a movement, Roberto. That you have not just a community of fans, you have a community of former contestants. They're going to help you.
Yeah, no, we're
going.
A family. Yeah. We're a family. You know, the biggest loser. They want you to keep that weight off. It's not a show to them. You know, obviously it is, you know, but when it all comes down to it, they want you to be healthy. They want you to continue doing what you're doing. And if the show ended today, I'm sure that we'll still be getting calls from different people that are from The Biggest Loser, because they're our biggest fans, and they're really supportive, and I can't thank them a lot. Without them, this wouldn't have been possible.
And one thing that's hard, Roberto, is to kind of stay in hiding when you've lost all that weight, especially when the season ends, meaning like all the things and you know you're a finalist. You kind of got to stay in the background. How do you do that? Once you leave the ranch, how do you kind of keep quiet so that people don't know how much weight you've lost and stuff like that, you know, via social media? You're kind of like a blackout almost, right, in a way of what where you were from the last episode. Yeah.
It was kind of tough, you know. You go out, and I went out to the motorcycle convention that was in Chicago at the Stephen Convention Center, and walking around, you know, I have to wear a hat and, you know, kind of wear a hoodie so people don't really recognize you, and you still get people coming up to you. And I had someone just say, "Roberto," just yell at me, and I had to turn around thinking it was a friend, but no, it was someone that recognized me. Oh, and you know, it's amazing. You know, I'm never going to turn away a fan. I'm never, and it's so weird for me to say fans, to have that I have fans. It's just so weird. But
you're a celebrity
now,
Roberto. You have to remember that. Get ready for the ride. Even ones that have.
Yeah, and I'm buckled in.
You're buckled
in. That's pretty exciting. Yeah.
So what advice would you offer people that are struggling from weight right now? What advice would you offer to try to get them? They want to really drop that weight. What advice would you offer?
I'm gonna tell them the truth. There is no miracle pill. There is no I'm gonna wait to get on the Biggest Loser thing. No, because I was a lucky person that got picked and was able to go to the show. But that's not gonna happen. The typical American person, 99.999% of America. Is not going to go to the show. You're not going to lose that weight. My biggest recommendation is just starting. I promise that if you take one step, the other foot follows, you know, and that's just genetics. Your body's just going to continue to move. You just have to move. I started a hashtag called #GetOffTheCouchAmerica, and I want to hear people's progress. I want to hear about their struggle because, you know, it's the same thing all across this country. And just getting up and moving, just starting.
Fantastic. You're an inspiration, Roberto. Social media, we can search you, Google you, but I'm sure you're starting to build social media contacts like Twitter and all that stuff. If there's anything you want to promote right now, tell us. We got like 20 seconds.
Yeah, my Twitter is Roberto Hernandez 17. It's the same thing for my Facebook. And then I asked people to do my fan page. The other one is already full, so I can't add any more people. And then my Instagram is Roberto Hernandez 77. Follow me. Give me a little bit of support because I need it just as much as everyone else. And then if I could, I would reply. If not, make sure that every time I say a prayer on there that you're included. And I love you guys. And God bless America.
All right. Best of luck. God bless you. And take care, Roberto. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Total Celebrity Show. We'll be back in just a moment.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Total Celebrity Show. You can go to my website, TotalTutor.net, for more information. Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, Total Tutor, Pinterest, Neil Haley, and Google+. And also on Periscope at Total Tutor. I really like this show on NBC, so I'm excited to welcome the program from NBC Superstore, Ben Feldman. Ben,
How's
thanks for calling. How are you?
I'm good. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, you play Jonah, and I just laugh all the time when I watch the show. It's so funny. It reminds me of, you know, going to the superstores and what kind of craziness you'll see, for sure.
It's surreal. It's changed my experience going to these stores. Like, I feel like I were, you know, I can't go to a Target or went to Bed Bath & Beyond last night. I walk into these places and I start stressing because I feel like I'm at work and I'm late.
Well, I mean, it's because you're playing the character so well. Now, tell us about your character, Jonah. Jonah, I mean, you get so much of the storyline in so many ways, and yet, somehow you don't belong at the superstore in certain aspects. Explain, maybe overqualified in certain aspects. Tell a little bit about your character.
Yeah, he definitely he doesn't fit in with the rest of the group. He's kind of got this. He's sort of got this elitist, you know, big city, almost sometimes obnoxious kind of a vibe to him. But in other ways, he's sort of the biggest bumbling idiot out of the group at the same time. So it's kind of a wash. But yeah, he comes from a different place, I think, than everybody else.
And he's learning so much about different cultures, different backgrounds in working at the store, isn't he, Ben?
Yeah, he is. It's funny. I'm you know, people ask all the time, like, did I need any experience working in any of these stores or this kind of. But I'm learning at the same time that Jonah is, so I kind of feel like him a whole bunch as well. Plus, most of the jokes making fun of him are really just the writers of our show in a room making fun of me and writing it down on paper. So, I feel like I'm very much living the exact same experience Jonah is.
Definitely, Ben, and I was talking to Mark McKinney about it, and he said the same thing about basically like how great the show is and how the cast is gelling together for sure, too. And tell us a little bit about that opportunity to work with the cast that you have.
You know, you're always worried going into one of these kind of situations. You don't know if everybody's going to get along, or you know, there's always going to be some idiot in the group that spoils it for everybody else. But we don't have any of those issues on this show. It's a really, really great group of people. Everyone's become really, really good friends. We hang out way more than we need to. We all went to Vegas the second the show wrapped together and with all the writers and had a great trip to get, like, we vacation well together. It's a really good group.
Well, that's the fun part about it is it's a good group that you get along with. And I think that one of the things I think is the funniest about the show is not just the storyline in between the storyline. What is up with those little, like, parts that they show a clip before a clip where you just have to really pay attention?
We call those interstitials, and you know, on a lot of shows, if you watch a normal show, in between scenes, they'll cut to, like, an exterior shot of the house or of the store or wherever it is, you know, a shot of the sky or something like that to show time passing or that this is a different moment. And we do those instead, and I think it's one of, I agree, I think it's one of the most special things about this show. There's nothing more fun than reading the script every week, reading those, and then at the end of every single script is a long list of all the extra ones in case they need them. It's just the writers brainstorming ridiculous moments and listing them out. It's really cool.
And what's really fun also about the show is that you probably have seen this in a Walmart, in a Costco, a Sam's Club, the kind of things that you see in this show. And that's the part. Everyone can relate to this. And that's a key part, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. I think the show, at risk of sounding like a company man here, I think the show really is very relatable to just about every kind of demographic there is. If you don't have experience and if you don't find familiarity and recognize these certain moments, then you haven't been, you just don't seem like, I don't know, you seem foreign to me. Like, everybody's been in one of these stores, and everybody can watch this show and say, oh, yeah, I get that. So that's definitely one of the main things that drew me to the show. It's what I love about it.
And most definitely, for sure, Ben. And the upcoming episodes, again, Monday nights, 8 p.m. Eastern. You can watch NBC's Superstore. Upcoming episodes that we're looking forward to, some of the next couple episodes. Can you tell us a little bit
about it? We just got one. If you have not seen Superstore, you can go on demand, or you can go on Hulu, and you can binge all the rest of them. But tonight is actually our finale. At 8 o'clock. So this is the one to watch, especially if you have a Nielsen box.
All right. Okay. So the finale. And so can you give us a hint about the finale at all, Ben?
Yeah, it's pretty thematically. It's sort of a big thing for the average sitcom. I mean, they sort of tackle labor and workmen's rights, and it's a, you know, there's a whole giant thing that happens in that sort of corporate company world of Superstore, and everybody stands together, and there's a big cliffhanger for the end of the season. It's a really cool episode.
Well, I love the show. And I continue success for the show, and that's my hope is for sure. Because again, the characters are great. It's funny, and it's just so relatable. I mean, I was a professional wrestler, Ben, going down south, so I remember these stories all the time. Wrestling down south, it's just the characters that you meet the store, for sure.
It's Americana. Yeah. We've got a crazy, entertaining country, I think, and that's what the show is.
Exactly. Best place we can find information on you, Ben, for yourself as well. Remember tonight, 8 p.m. Eastern, the finale, NBC Superstore. But best place we can find info on you. Where can we go?
For me?
Yeah.
Google? I don't know.
Are you on Twitter? You're on Twitter, Ben, aren't you?
I am on Twitter. Who's Ben Feldman on Twitter, and Ben M. Feldman on Instagram.
All right, well, fantastic. Anything else going on you want to promote? Or just remember to tune in tonight, 8 p.m. Eastern, right?
Yeah, tonight, 8 o'clock Eastern, or, you know, watch it on demand later. Tell your friends. Let's get everyone behind this one.
We would definitely will, Ben. Thanks for calling, and best of luck. Thanks for coming on the show.
All right, thanks for having me.
All right, take care, Ben. Okay, bye-bye.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Total Celebrity Show. You can check me out at Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, Total Tutor, Pinterest, Neil Haley, and Google Plus, and also on Periscope at Total Tutor. And I'm excited to talk to this guest because anytime I get to talk about the O.J. Simpson trial, I get excited because everyone remembers where we're at. So I want to welcome the program Celebrity from The People versus O.J. Simpson, American Crime Story on FX, Bruce Greenwood. Bruce, thanks for calling, and how are you?
I'm good, so I'm glad to be with you this morning.
Absolutely, Bruce. I guess I'm sure all the radio tour interviews and TV interviews you've done, everyone asks you, where were you with during the O.J. Simpson trial? So what was going on? What were you at?
When the chase happened, I was at a falafel stand on Ventura Boulevard. Yep.
Really?
Yeah. Walked in, and there was like 15 people jammed up against the counter. I'm kind of going, man, it's good falafel, but it's not that good. What are people telling me? Holy crap, what's up there on the ceiling? And there's a tiny little 9-inch television screen, and everybody was like, their falafels hanging in their hands, mouths open, just watching this Bronco drive down the 405.
I mean, I was thinking, I was watching it on TV, and I was just blown away, and I said, oh, my gosh, because you and I probably thought of O.J. in a different way. We thought of him as the Hertz car commercial guy, and the guy who was just the greatest to interview people and one of the sweetest guys on television. And then this happened, but probably you knew O.J.
in L.A. Yeah, tremendous.
Yeah.
Yeah, this tremendously sunny public persona, and which was all any of us were familiar with, except those closest to him, I guess. And, you know, that's one of the things about, you know, the bizarre thing about celebrity and fame and the power of the media is those of us who are like you and me or who are in the media, we can doctor our sort of descriptions as much as we want until somebody sort of, you know, leans over the fence and has a good look. And, you know, then it's all bets are off because we're all human.
Exactly. Definitely all human for sure. And I'm sure you watched the whole trial at times and getting the feedback and waiting for that verdict. And once you got the opportunity to audition, I'm sure you were excited with the cast that you were going to work with and stuff like that once you got the gig, weren't you?
They called me. Yeah. They said, listen, Nina and Brad, the producers, want to have a talk with you and see how into it you are. And And I knew at that point that the script was based on Jeffrey Toobin's book, The Run of His Life. So I read that book before I had a conversation with them. And you know, by the time I closed the last page of the book, I was like, I got to be in this. This is just too fascinating.
Yeah, because
it's one of the things that we're dealing with right now. Sorry?
Right. No, I was going to say, it's a water cooler conversation. Think of how much of a water cooler conversation was when it happened. But now everyone's reminiscing again, for sure.
Well, the horrible irony is that we're reminiscing about a time of cultural discontent that continues to this day, and if not, is even more resonant than it is now, than it was then. You know, I mean, you think of the riots in L.A. that preceded this trial, and you know, you look at the discontent, you look what happens in Ferguson and elsewhere throughout the country, and just go, wow, this conversation ain't over.
It's definitely not over, and it leads to that conversation. And now you play Gil Garcetti, the DA, and tell us for people that, you know, might not be our age, or you're maybe a little bit older than me, Bruce, but close to that, we all remember that time. Who was Gil Garcetti, and what was his role in this trial?
Gil Garcetti was the DA and at that time in Los Angeles. And what the DA does is he had about 1,100 lawyers underneath him dealing with various suits. So he was the guy with literally over 1,000 lawyers doing hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds of different cases. And two of the lawyers that were assigned to OJ were sort of walked in and said, you know, that morning when it all happened, suddenly Marcia Clark was in the driver's seat.
Yep, for sure. And what is your take on how the DA did this? Do you think it was he did a good job, or he lost, but did you think he fouled up in specific ways from studying this case and playing him?
Well, no, I don't think there's, you really, I don't think you can lay blame at any one person at all. I mean, the more you know about the circumstances of the trial, the more you realize that it is very, very difficult given the way our justice system works, and given the way our justice system now is at the mercy of being sort of being tried in the public, tried in the media. It is very difficult to forge ahead with the truth. Sometimes the truth doesn't matter. The truth is, you know, I mean, all you have to do is look at what's happening in during an election cycle to realize that, you know, truth doesn't spend a whole lot of time front and center.
Definitely. And Jeff Bax, Tuesdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, tonight at 10 p.m. Eastern, do you have what's the upcoming episode? What is it going to be about? This episode coming up tonight.
Well, I think we're into episode 4, and so we shot this last year. I can't tell you exactly,
okay,
from memory what's going to happen tonight. But whatever happens, it'll be another opportunity to go, what the? Are you kidding me? Really, that happened?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because once you see this from this point of view, you're going to finally see stuff that you weren't able to pick up when you were watching the mainstream media cover this. And all these things and saying, holy cow, this really happened, Bruce. Really, they uncovered it. And you know, when the glove comes, how much is that going to get over off of the social media sphere when the whole glove portion comes? And I guess some of the other times of the prosecution and their foul-ups and everyone's foul-up, it'll be very interesting to relive all of that for sure, Bruce.
Well, yeah, and of course, in this movie, you're given context for what you could be forgiven for calling, well, was for foul ups, but you're given the context of these foul ups, and you realize what led to them making these incredibly ill considered decisions at the last moment, and this that goes for both prosecution and defense. I mean, there were tremendous missteps, and also some genius in terms of use of the media and use of the law, the way the laws are written.
The Twitter sphere was lighting up every time this is on. I already see that. I'm going to make sure I go back to On Demand to catch up on this because I'm just fascinated. I was fascinated by the trial now, then, and I'm fascinated now. Best place we can follow you, Bruce, do you have a Twitter or Facebook for people to kind of connect with you?
No, I think there's a fake Facebook out there, a guy who pretends to be me. So if you see me on Facebook, it's somebody else. Yeah, a couple of years ago, there was a Facebook site where the guy was going, yeah, me and my wife had a great holiday. Here's some pictures. And the guy pulled, like, pictures from somewhere. And so, no, I'm pretty under the radar that way. I've got to pull that together. But right now, there's no Twittering to be had.
No Twittering to be had. So the best thing to do is just Google you and find out about Bruce and all the amazing other projects he has going on and has gone on. And I appreciate you calling. And definitely I'm going to check everything out. And best of luck with the rest of the show and the success of it. Okay, Bruce?
Thanks so much. Yeah, thanks a lot.
You're listening to the Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Total Celebrity Show. You can check me out on Twitter at TotalTutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, TotalTutor, Pinterest, Neil Haley, and Google+, and also on Periscope at TotalTutor. And I'm excited about my guests because we're going to talk Oscars, the preview for Sunday night's show. So I'm excited to welcome the program from E! News, Mark Malkin. Mark, thanks for calling, and how are you?
I'm pretty good. I'm getting ready for the weekend.
Oh my God! You're gonna be swamped, aren't you? Like
it's gonna be nonstop.
Go 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 go! And kind of take this place in the preview. How do you prepare yourself for such an event like?
How
this?
Do I prepare myself? A lot of coffee. A lot of coffee. A lot of research, just making sure, you know, if I'm going to be interviewing someone, I know what I'm talking about. There's a lot of research, and it really starts going crazy. It started going crazy last night. It was really sort of my first Oscar weekend event, which was the Oscar Wilde Awards here in Los Angeles, where James Corden and Daisy Ridley were honored. So it all started there, and now I'm just going to go nonstop until about Monday afternoon.
And then at Monday afternoon, you'll put your feet up and say, it's over. And for our listeners out there, how, like, preparing for an interview, especially when it's going to be 2 to 3 to 4 minutes sometimes, or even less.
Yep.
How do you come up with those quick questions?
Just trying to zero in on exactly what I want from the celebrity. You know, everyone on that carpet, they're asking a lot of the same questions. I'm trying to get different questions. A lot of my questions necessarily aren't even about the Oscars, because by the time I'm able to post it or you know, get it processed and get it online, you know, it's late already. So a lot of my stories really are for the days to come, where, you know, the celebs are talking about their new projects and things like that.
Right. And that's what they want. Then they respect you for that fact, because they want to have a platform like the Oscars to promote themselves or promote what
exactly
they're doing. And that's what I look at is in certain questions as well. We have so many things we could talk about the Oscars, and I'm sure since you've been doing all these interviews that I want to focus on so many different things in such a short period of time. So let's go to the red carpet. What do you expect fashion-wise and stuff on the red carpet that might be different than other years in the Oscars?
I think, you know, fashion-wise, and I think we've seen it for, you know, many years now, everyone plays it safe. They don't go too crazy. They know that people like us are going to be talking the next day or the day of or as soon as they hit the carpet and dissecting what they're wearing. So I think, you know, someone like Lady Gaga, you know, she's an Oscar nominee. Everyone's like, what is she going to come in? She's going to come in some crazy outfit. You know, last year she wore these weird red gloves. I think Lady Gaga is going to come in something very elegant, very classic, old Hollywood. She wants to win an Oscar. She wants more acting jobs. And the way to do that is to just, you know, be classic Hollywood and not popping out of eggs.
And she's very smart. I mean, she knows how to brand herself. She knows how to reinvent herself in so many ways. And if she wants if she wants to be walking announced as the winner of the Oscar, she doesn't want to look like a train wreck, because that's all they'll be talking about. But by showing professionalism and representing, do you think she's going to win, Mark? That's the question.
I think she has a very good chance of winning. People really love the song. People really love Gaga this award season. You know, she did win a Golden Globe for American Horror Story, and she's really been making the rounds. I actually sat with her at lunch for the Oscar nominees luncheon, and, you know, she's very humble about it, very sort of, you know, deer in the headlights. Like, what am I doing here? How did I get here?
Exactly. It's so amazing. And so one other quick thing with the red carpet, then we'll get to Chris Rock hosting, and then some maybe surprises you expect for Sunday.
Great.
So let's go with any other fashion things we should expect on the red carpet.
I think it's just going to be really elegant. Probably there'll be one or two people who really stand out. I mean, in terms of who's going to look incredible, Cate Blanchett, in my book, can never do any wrong. She could wear a paper bag, and she's going to look elegant in it. So I can't wait to see what she's wearing. Lady Gaga, too. I'm so excited to see what she's wearing. Kate Winslet's going to look amazing. I mean, these women who've been nominated, you know, are ones who hit the carpet, and they absolutely stun.
Absolutely. Okay, let's go to the hosting. What do you expect from Chris Rock this year, especially with some of a little bit of the controversy going on and the boycott and stuff? How do you think he's going to handle things this year?
You know, I think he's going to handle things really well. Chris Rock is a smart man. He's one of the best comedians, you know, that we've ever had. I think he's the perfect comedian to address Oscars so white. But the question is, how is he going to do it? He has to walk a very fine line, the fine line of being funny but being serious. And at all at the same time, needs to capture the audience so they'll watch the rest of the Oscars. So it's going to be very interesting to see if he captures the audience, because everyone's going to be tuning in to hear what he says. Whether you hate the Oscars or love the Oscars, everyone's going to be tuning in because you want to know how he's going to do it. Next question is, can he hold on to that audience?
And you think he definitely will, don't you, Mark?
I think he will. I think, you know, I think one of the problems the Oscars has, and it's not so much the Oscars' fault, it's really this town that I live in, Hollywood. We analyze these award shows and these nominations down to the very little, most minutiae. So by the time the Oscars come around, we pretty much know who's going to win everything. So
yes.
It is, there's a part of it that's anticlimactic. It's still the Oscars, and it's still fantastic. So I think, you know, the host really has to give us something different and unexpected, because we know who's winning Best Actor. We know who's winning Best Actress.
So predictions, let's go Best Picture. You think it's going to be Leo's film? You think it's going to happen?
I think it's going to be The Revenant. I think the tide really turned in the last few weeks for The Revenant. I thought for a very long time it was going to be Spotlight. I think if it's not Revenant, it's going to be Spotlight, but I'm almost 99% sure I think it's going to be Revenant.
Any prediction on a surprise for the Oscars? Anything you think is going to happen?
You know, what I keep joking is, you know, the only surprise that I could see happening, but it won't happen, is if Leonardo DiCaprio doesn't win. But he's going to win. But if by some weird chance he doesn't, literally I think, you know, Hollywood will implode.
Wow. Okay, Mark. Everyone needs to tune in on Sunday with all your coverage. So where can we find information on you, and let us know how we can tune in live to watch all your coverage before the Oscars, during the red carpet, and afterwards, all that stuff? Where can we go?
Well, make sure you go to E! Online. E! Online for 24/7. It is going to be Oscars all weekend. We're going to be at the parties before the Oscars, the parties after the Oscars. And then, of course, you know, tune into E! On Sunday all day. We have our live from the red carpet, our countdown show. So we've got you on everywhere.
Well, 8 minutes is not enough time with Mark. Good talking to you. Best of luck. And drink a lot of coffee. All right, Mark?
I will.
All right, take care. Thanks again.
Take care.
Bye-bye. You're listening to the Total Celebrity Show. We'll be back in just a moment. Hi, everyone, and welcome to Office Corner. You can connect with me on Twitter at Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, Total Tutor, Pinterest, Neil Haley, Google Plus, and also on Periscope at Total Tutor. And, you know, I consider this one of my celebrity segments, because if you're going to discuss the book of Pope Francis' latest release, he is the rock star of rock stars. But I'm excited to welcome the program. I do have him on the line. The president of the University of Notre Dame, Father John Jenkins. Father John, are you on the line?
I am, Neil. Great to be with you.
Oh, it's fantastic, and I'm so excited to have this conversation with you. Again, this is the Year of Mercy. His book is The Name of God is Mercy. For our listeners out there that don't understand the call that happened on December 8th, 2015, for this Year of Mercy, explain a little bit about that, and then what the book. Well, then we'll get into the book.
Sure. You know, the Pope has, centuries back in the Catholic Church, he has the right to proclaim a year devoted to some theme. And the Pope has decided to dedicate this year to God's mercy, to raise our consciousness, to make us aware and reflect on around the world the mercy of God. So really that's what we're in the middle of right now, and that's why this book is so timely.
It is so timely, and a lot of people don't understand, even as Catholics, mercy. You know, they try to stick to the Ten Commandments, they, you know, live the sacraments, but they really don't understand what, again, this is part of Pope Francis' mission since he became Pope, is for us to really think about these things more. So kind of define a little bit about what this Year of Mercy entails.
Yeah. Well, that's a great question. And, you know, I think you can put it in a nutshell, saying it's really his way of saying that the heart of the Christian message is the mercy and love of God. You know, I think the Ten Commandments are extremely important. Sacraments is extremely important, and for us to live that way. But it's first and foremost not about what we do, but about God's love for us. And that allows us then to go forth and live as we should. And so really the whole year is kind of devoted to reflecting on that fact and what it means for our lives to show mercy to others and to show love to others.
Show mercy to others and love to others by reflecting on God's mercy towards us as sinners.
I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
Oh, that's okay, Father. You continue.
Okay. Yeah. I think the Pope hopes that we reflect on God's mercy, but also we experience God's mercy. I think one of the things is a priest I'm aware of, and I hear confessions, but even outside of confessions, is that people often, there are sort of broken parts in their lives, things they regret, things that they struggle with that they can't seem to overcome. And, you know, people, you know, the great grace of being a priest is people tell you those things and they confide in you on those things. And I think the Pope is saying the first thing you have to say to people is no matter what, you know, God loves you, welcomes you, embraces you, and we'll work together on whatever challenges you have. But you first have to experience in your heart kind of just the love of God for you, regardless of what failures you have.
That God loves us. And that's God is love, and I think that's a important to look, a thing to look at, Father, is God is love, because we see the certain circumstances in our lives, how crazy the world is today, and all the threats that are going on, and even in our homes and our families and all these things, that God is love, and God wants to love us, and we have to open our arms to Him, and that's the major first part of this component of Your Mercy.
That's exactly, and I think that's a good summary of what the Pope wants to tell us.
Yeah, well, thank you. You're definitely the expert, and I was so excited to talk to you about that. But again, that just starts it. Once we experience God's love, we have to share it with others in so many ways. So the book is pretty much outlining this Year of Mercy. Am I correct, Father? That's pretty much what this book does.
Yeah.
Talking to you. Yeah.
Yeah, he talks about that idea, and you know, and the nice thing about the book, and I want to tell your listeners that it's a very readable book, very easy to read, because it's just really the Pope talking to a reporter and reflecting on this God's mercy, and so it really comes out of his own experience of it. So it's not a difficult, thick, demanding book, but it's a very readable book and something that can be a basis for real reflection on our own lives.
And what I like also is the opportunity to share this book with others, and especially as Catholics, to share it with other Christians, but also people that need to come back to the church, because sometimes we see some of these difficult road things, what we want to get these people up the incline plane is first understanding that God loves them, because so many people are suffering all around us.
Mm-hmm.
But it's for them to experience God's love and know that God is with them is so important. Right, Father?
I think that is so true. And I think people in their hearts, you know, they may be angry or they may be alienated, but they really want to hear that message of God's love. If we can just find a way to get it to them, I think it can change their lives. And nobody's perfect. You certainly don't have to be perfect to come into the church, and we all have our failures, but what you have to be is you have a heart open to hear that message of love and hope.
Okay, so let's talk about some of these call to actions. Every year that the Pope names in specific ways as times that we need to become better at specific things. So first we open to God's love. We let God's arms love us. Then we have a mission, and that's the Pope. And this, I believe that this mission, when we talk about the Year of Mercy, is pretty much what he showed in his pontificate so far. A little different than other popes in a way that really we have to go to the masses. So give us some of these things that are in the book for people to know, then they can to read it further in the book, but about the Year of Mercy, things that we need to do.
Yeah, you know, I think it is. He talks about confession, and I think if someone's a Catholic, confession can be such a healing thing. Because I know for me, people say, "Oh, it must be difficult," but I never feel more relieved or more peace than when I've gone to confession. Because I almost feel like whatever is on my mind, whatever has burdened me, I've just taken it off, and God's taken it off, and I can just have a completely new start. And I hope people take advantage of that, because it's a wonderful. There's no better feeling than to think, okay, I've gotten rid of that burden. I can start anew here.
And you're so right about confession. And here I'm a Catholic that came into the Catholic Church. I think I think it was 2005. And my wife's Catholic, and I'm a convert, and really have embraced the faith tremendously. But when I had that first confession, and I was able to tell the priest, who's acting as Jesus, my sins, and then I was cleansed of my sins, the burden that was taken off of me was so powerful that I felt a lot of the things that I did bad in my life or as a sinner, really now it's time to begin again. And that's what confession brings.
I'm so glad you told that story, because that really is what the Pope was talking about. He hopes that everybody has the kind of experience you had and can feel that just that newness of I can start again. Why? Because God is merciful. And so I hope people have that same experiences, because it really can enrich your life in beautiful ways.
And it's great, again, when we're seeing a lot more and more people coming back to confession and seeing how important and powerful it is that to talk to a priest and even schedule that time to go face-to-face with a priest is so important, because you're able to really share what's happening. Confession is not just about confessing your sins. It's how we're going to do better so we don't do it again. Advice the priest is able to offer so we don't do it again, and the sharing to develop that connection with your priest.
Yeah, if you have a good priest, it can give you that confession. I'll tell you, one of the things I most enjoy being a priest is hearing confessions, because you feel like, you know, you feel like you can write checks of forgiveness for people from an unlimited bank account. You know, no matter what they've done, you can say God forgives you, and it's a wonderful experience. And as you say, it leads to kind of a real transformation of people's lives.
Absolute transformation. So that's one of the things. And I think that one thing I touch upon, and I'm sure you'll jump to some other stuff, but maybe I didn't, because I've read a lot. I didn't read the popes. I've read other people that have authored things of ideas of what I need to do to live this Year of Mercy better. There's two types of different works of mercy. A lot of time we talk about the corporal works of mercy, but there's two different ones. So you can describe, first of all, what we have to corporal works of mercy, but also spiritual works. So let's go to corporal.
Yeah, corporal really, you know, it's really helping people in their physical needs, feeding the hungry, giving drink to the thirsty, clothing the naked, sheltering the homeless, visiting the sick, visiting imprisoned, burying the dead. And, you know, the Pope has kind of visited prisons. He visited old age homes. And it's a good reminder for all of us because sometimes yeah. You know, older people, we're so busy, we can kind of not pay any attention to them or people in prison, but what can we do for them? Any of those are corporal works of mercy, and the Pope's encouraging us to take a few and spend some time doing those things.
It's such importance in all the different areas. But I agree, going to people that are not able to get visitors. How many people mm-hmm. don't have any loved ones that live in their area? Their kids moved away. They've lost a loved one, and they're just the most fascinating people to help, to talk to be there for, and it's going to mm-hmm. benefit not just the person but yourself as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's going to make your life richer.
I have five kids of my own, Father John, and basically I'm...
Oh, my gosh, that's a big family.
Yes. And I hope for myself, the ages range from 11 to two, when the boys get a little older, it's time to really start to provide that on Sundays, to schedule that on a Sunday, to do those things, to go see loved ones or people in homes that really need that help, to go to the donate time to a food kitchen, whatever type of place, because when we're able to do that acts of service, it really shows God's mm-hmm. mercy for others, and so that they could see God's mercy. And that's important. And I think sometimes we miss that point. As I talked about all these rote things that we do as Catholics or even as Christians, the simple part of service is that love is what we can bring people to believe in God and love God.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. When I was younger, my mother, when I come home for vacation or something, she'd always have a list of the people I needed to visit who were in nursing homes or hospitals. And I tell you to my shame that, you know, I always sort of complained about that and whined about it. But she was doing me a great favor because she was asking me to do corporal works of mercy and get in the habit of it. And it's a great thing. It's a great habit to get into.
All right. Again, we're talking to Father John Jenkins, president of the University of Notre Dame, about Pope Francis' latest new bestseller, The Name of God is Mercy, about especially it's all really entails the Year of Mercy. And what I think the book is able to bring into, I can't wait to read it, is to highlight a lot of the areas. And the thing is, the Pope's encyclicals, and when you read up on that, it's a lot of reading. But this book, as you said, is really set up for people that can, a variety of backgrounds can read, right? Read and understand and take action, right?
Absolutely. And very down to earth and very simple.
Now, I talked about the corporal works. The spiritual works of mercy are a lot of times forgotten when we're talking about works of mercy. Mm-hmm. Am I correct?
That's right. That's right. But they include things like counseling people who are down. You know, that's something that we can all do. Be admonishing sinners, instructing people who are ignorant, comforting the afflicted, forgiving offenses. You know, I know in my life, and I think all of us, you know, people, we're angry at people who have
right.
slighted us or done something bad to us. Well, you know, it's corporate work of mercy is to actually forgive them. And so that's a wonderful thing. Burying the dead and bearing wrongs patiently, so that's something we can all do. So those are the spiritual works of mercy. And in our day-to-day lives, I think they have a lot of applications.
What I like in the fact of which we look at John Paul and how we are all called to holiness, that our opportunity to do these spiritual works in our daily work, in our whatever work that we're doing, it doesn't mm-hmm. matter if it's at home, it's in a profession. You don't constantly have to, beat them over a head with a Bible, but your model and then your caringness,
yeah.
because people are forgetting to care, Father. They're forgetting to care for others.
Yeah.
So when you do show and see what's important about that person and really get to know that person and care who they are and not about the age of ourselves and the selfie, but reflect that mercy on them and to talk to them and to hear what's going on and to help them through their problems, that's a key component in it for us as Christians.
Yeah, it is, and that's probably the most important message we preach. You know, just how we live our lives and how we treat people, that will have an impact on others.
I want to get the message out, Father John, that we as Catholic Christians have to really explain the faith better. And the way we're going to be able to explain the faith better is that we are all trying to live holy lives. We're struggling as sinners, but we want to go out and do that. And when Catholics are educated more and formed more to understand that it's not just the priest's job or the religious to go out and convert and bring people back to the sacraments and the church and confession, and it's the job of each individual Catholic who's baptized, we're going to have a much better situation. We're going to have a lot more people that are peace-filled, smiling, happy, and are ready to do the great works in whatever God calls people to do.
Yeah, you know, the Pope's first encyclical was precisely about that. How about all of us are called to be, you know, preach the gospel? And it was a beautiful, beautiful title. It was The Joy of the Gospel. We, by the way we live, we have to bring the joy of the gospel to the world around us. And that's more powerful than any message that people will read in a newspaper or see on TV.
Any other things that I missed? Because, again, I'm going to talk to my confessor. He's laughing. And he said, see if you know all of what's happening with your mercy and some of my spiritual director. Is there anything else I have missed that's going to be highlighted in the book about the Your Mercy? Are there other calls that we did not discuss in this interview?
Well, you know, I think we've hit the main points. It's a rich book, and there are many things. But in a way, it's a simple point at the heart of it. It really is that the first thing, you know, when we speak about faith and we speak about Christian faith or Catholicism, the first thing is the love of God. That's where we start. And then, you know, and to kind of experience that love in our own lives and to let God's love heal ourselves and then heal the world around us is really as simple as that. Many, many things could be said, but if you can get that message, I think you've got the heart of it.
All right, now let's see if Father John, do you have places we can follow you, especially, you know, you're promoting some of the things with Pope Francis and with being the president of Notre Dame. Are there places we could connect with you and stuff, or we just Google you, and then I know we could purchase the book anywhere, anywhere, Amazon,
yeah.
any bookstore, all over the world, but can we connect with you anywhere, Father?
Well, you know, I think maybe through the Notre Dame website, maybe the best place. I have a page there with speeches and things like that. I think that may be the best place, or just, you can probably Google me. You may get the bad news as well as the good news, and most of it may be about football. But
Well, remember Rudy. I interviewed Rudy last month, and so – there you go. There goes the connection via Notre Dame. But thanks again for calling, Father. Enjoy the conversation. And definitely we're going to get that message of Your Mercy this year. So thanks for calling.
Oh, Neil, it's been a delight. Thank you for the time.
Oh, you too. Take care now. Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
You're listening to Author's Corner, and we'll be back in just a moment. Districts have what districts don't have. And you go till you get what you want. And the more you fight them, the more you have an opportunity to win. If you go in like, oh, sure, I trust you guys, you're not going to get the best, and that's too bad. And don't you wish, Gwendolyn, we could have a better system for special education students in the United States? I think our special ed students are missing out so much.
where there's limited, you know, services. And, you know, my understanding is, you know, the numbers and the classrooms and the amount of teachers that are going into this field, that number is deteriorating. And it's sad, you know, because we need them to be growing because the numbers of child that are being diagnosed with some form of mental illness are growing. So, you know, when I started hearing about that, you know, it just really, you know, pierced my heart. It's a sad affair, even in terms of people going into the field of dealing with kids with mental illness and facilities and things like that. I mean, it's that number is deteriorating as well. The other battle, you know, unfortunately I had to deal with was when Justin did become severe and was diagnosed with schizophrenia, having, you know, a situation where he had to go into a facility. You know, parents have that battle. And finding an appropriate place or battling about how long and private insurance and all these things.
I've not heard of that phenomenon of autistic children developing schizophrenia. So how is he doing now? You talked about he had to be placed at times during this time with the mental illness schizophrenia. What's new with him now?
Well, you know, when he was diagnosed at age 14, he had a brain cyst at age 13. Shortly after that, and removing the brain cyst, some characteristics of schizophrenia came about. And, you know, we put it under the umbrella of autism because we didn't really realize, thought maybe he was mimicking or sounding out movies or conversations.
Yeah.
But he was actually hearing voices, five different voices, and he's very vocal about it. You know, what I have done with Justin, I don't know if you've ever watched the movie The Beautiful Mind with Russell Crowe. I decided to kind of follow that lead of that. And what Russell Crowe did in that movie, as we know, is that he started to try to distinguish what was real and what wasn't and began to drown out voices and acknowledge them. A lot of people with schizophrenia have paranoia schizophrenia, and they're keeping it from everyone else. They didn't want to talk about it. So I had to get Justin to a place where he understood, I need to know when you're hearing voices and what voices are there.
Yes.
And that wasn't easy. So that I know how to help you, or Dr. Evans knows how to help you, so that we can get you the help that you need. He's to the point now, if it's bad, he will say, Mom, I need to go to the hospital. The voices are bothering me. So we go through the cycles, but in the beginning, it was very hard because, you know, he had good voices, which is what my children inquires about, and he had bad voices. And the bad voice was very violent. So I really went through it, the attacks and things like that. And, you know, he, for as much as I thought I was super mom and I could handle everything, I found myself in a situation where doctors were saying, we need to keep him for a while in order to effectively help him. And I didn't want to do that. You know, I didn't want to do that until I realized it was way over my head.
Yeah.
But then the other battle is the fight that you go through when your child is going through this and having these behaviors and has the potential. And that's how we see these situations in the media. Really hurt you, hurt themselves, or hurt someone in the community.
Yeah, exactly.
You have insurances that are booting them out.
Yeah, exactly. You're not looking at mental illness, and I see that as another big mission for you, to help adults and children with mental illness. Question. So I was asking how we're doing, because we are getting close to running out of time. How is he doing?
He is actually doing very well. I don't want to knock on wood right now because you know and I know that, you know, that can change at any time. We definitely have times, you know, he's hearing the voices. He hums very loud at night at 2 o'clock in the morning and, you know, we'll get up and things like that. So we have moments, but nothing to that degree. He's manager of the basketball team. He just finished a fashion show where he made it. I said, I guess I'm not the only one getting pressed. He made it into the Forsyth County newspaper. He's having a good time enjoying seeing himself on TV. And, you know, I will say that he's in a great school and he has great relationships with the other kids there. And they just love him. He has Instagram. He has Facebook. He, you know.
That's great. Awesome. Okay, so it's a good story, but yet it's a challenging story. And you've been wiped out throughout the years from 3 to now 18. And what you're going through, and it seems like you've really overcome a lot of things. He's functioning, speaks some, is able to communicate, and what are your plans when he's finished with high school? What do you want to do with him?
Well, this is the thing. He comes out, you know, he's 21 now. He comes out of school in December. So
okay.
This is why it's important to have adults. That next year, there's not a lot out there. And you have to keep them so actively involved. Structure is so important. So
definitely.
One of the things that I plan on doing with the nonprofit is eventually getting a facility and having them be able to come and learn some life skills, be able to kind of have a project where it gets them more into the community and get them some jobs and things of that nature.
Awesome.
And, you know, hopefully get some living accommodations. I mean, I do real estate. You know, I can possibly get some upscale group homes or even a complex to where we can have some adult living communities or people that have mental illness with some staff there. And I think that would be a great thing.